It's Thursday night. Time for the Psychic View with your hosts, Miss Peg, Maureen, Allura, and Steve. During the second half of the show, call in to connect for your free reading. Join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Welcome to the Psychic View on Psychic Access Talk Radio, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all the psychics are interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, ensuring you the highest quality of quality service.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Allura, and welcome back to tonight's broadcast of The Psychic View, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. I'd like to welcome my fellow co-hosts. Hi, Maureen. How are you tonight?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I'm so excited for this show. There's going to be lots of very different information, different from what the norm is out there on Kabbalah, so I'm excited about this. Hi, Steve. How are you tonight?
I'm wonderful, thank you. Very happy to be here and to learn about Kabbalah.
We're happy to have you with us. I do want to say we are missing Miss Peg tonight. She's feeling under the weather. We miss her. We're asking everybody to send get well prayers to her, and she will be back next week. So we look forward to that. Tonight I'll be interviewing our special guest, Christopher Joyner, also known as Rabbi Yeshua Baruch Ben Avraham. His mission is to help humanity become whole, complete, and empowered through the study of Kabbalah. Traditionally, Kabbalah was never taught to non-Jewish people or women. We'll be learning tonight why Kabbalah has been kept secret for thousands of years. Rabbi Joyner is unique in that he teaches Kabbalah to all people of all spiritual backgrounds and gender. That is very unusual and certainly different from the traditional norm. He'll speak to us as to why Kabbalah is being open to everyone on the planet at this time, everyone who wishes to learn. Be sure to stay tuned for the second half of our show for a free on-air reading by four gifted psychics, namely, well, three tonight. Unfortunately, Miss Peg is missing, and again, we will be welcoming her back next week. But so by the three of us, we will announce the call-in number later in the show, so be sure to have your pen and paper ready. If you are unable to catch our show on electronic medium with Stephen Hill last week, you'll find a recorded archive link as well as archives for all our previous shows on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com under the Archives tab. Now it's time for our hot email and hot topics. We have a question from Richard Bradley, and he says, I've been studying the Kabbalah for just on 18 months. My study has not nearly begun on this subject. Are you telling me there's a shortcut? Well, I don't know if there's a shortcut, Richard. I'm not sure why you might have thought that I've somehow said that. What I'm really saying is there's information that isn't normally presented to the public regarding Kabbalah that our guest is going to share with us tonight, not necessarily a shortcut. I personally have no knowledge of any shortcut, but what I understand is that it's just traditionally not open to non-Jewish people or women, Jewish or non-Jewish. So our guest has opened it to everybody. Is there anybody else who might know of this? Maureen, Steve, do you know of anything?
You know, I think that, well, I'm going to be addressing that in our show later when we start talking, but I think maybe because of the big deal with the celebrities and the cabal, you know, all that stuff, maybe there's some, you know, misconception about what that is different than.
Oh, okay.
Is what, maybe that might be what he might be meaning by that. So.
Oh, good deal. Okay, so we'll talk about that later then.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we're going to have Steve talk to us about the planetary weather for the coming week. What's that going to be like, Steve?
Well, it's very interesting. From September the 14th until October the 28th, Mars is in Scorpio. And just like a bloodhound tracks the scent of a missing person, Mars enters Scorpio in hot pursuit of the planet of love. Although Mars will only be a few short degrees behind her, Venus will continue to remain just beyond his grasp. For Mars, the thrill of the chase adds to the excitement, and when he finally catches up to her on October the 3rd, she will retrograde straight into his protective embrace. If we're to experience the higher vibration of Scorpio, we must focus on actions that are rooted in love and that are of service to others. Mars understands that life does not end with death. Rather, it begins anew in an altered form. Consequently, while Mars is in Scorpio, the potential exists for each one of us to transform our lives by letting a situation, relationship, or belief die. However, as he navigates his way through the underworld, Mars can also be ruthless, obsessive, and controlling. Consequently, we need to make sure that our behavior doesn't become in any way callous, paranoid, or uncompromising. We roll through the upcoming weekend with the moon in Aquarius. And a moon in Aquarius comes with grand ideas, but ideas that can force us to have a problem with the nuts and bolts or the detail. So some of us may find the challenges of daily life, just like paying bills or doing the dishes, to be a Herculean struggle. You'll find that no matter what you say, you're not likely to get disapproval from the Aquarius moon, so be very wise with your words and your thoughts. Now, we begin next week with a moon void of course, from which we can all benefit. And this is a truly great time for a break from common activities, for relaxing, listening to music, or even reading literature, and just for relaxing and catching up with those household chores or routine activities that don't require too much focus. Interestingly, next Tuesday is the United Nations International Day of Peace. This Day of Peace has been observed each year on the 21st of September, and it's a global call for ceasefire and non-violence. Now, to inaugurate that day, the peace bell is rung at the United Nations headquarters, and the bell's cast from coins donated by children from all continents. And this was given, or the bell was given, as a gift by the Diet of Japan, and is referred to as a reminder of the human cost of war. And the inscription on the side of the bell reads, "Long live absolute world peace." So as we start next week's show, we'll have a full moon in Aries, which will help us in our quest to shed our old, worn-out shells and rise higher than we ever thought possible. And just as the phoenix is reborn, we too have tremendous energy at this time to let go of the past in order to grow, evolve, and seek our highest spiritual potential. Now, the autumnal equinox is also falling on the date of our next show, so we'll be talking about that more next week. But let's end this week's planetary weather with a quote from Dr. Loretta Standley. And she said, "If you believe things happen for a reason, then don't freak out when things do happen for a reason." So I hope everybody has a wonderful week. I would like to thank Miss Peg for sending us the planetary weather this week and for giving us this insight.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you, Steve.
My pleasure.
And I would like to welcome to the Psychic View Rabbi Joyner. He's with us tonight. Hi, Rabbi. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's so great to have you with us tonight. And I have some special guests who are here for you also, Susan and Rob Norgren.
Excellent.
So they're here to lend us our energy to really support this. This is awesome. I am so excited about all this because I know there's a lot of very, very interesting information that's going to come out for everybody, stuff that you don't find online or anywhere else, and that's what's so exciting about this. So the first question I have for you, Rabbi, is what is Kabbalah?
The word Kabbalah in Hebrew means to receive, literally meaning receive the light, knowledge, and wisdom of God. If one practices Kabbalah properly, they will illuminate. And illuminating means the development of your psychic and spiritual powers or inborn psychic and spiritual abilities.
Okay, great. So we develop spiritually with Kabbalah and with those types of practices. What?
Yes, ma'am.
Great. Can you give us a bit of your background? I find your background very, very interesting. Tell us about your background, your Christian ministry, and about your personal journey to Judaism, how, when, and why you converted, and so forth, if you would, and your study of Kabbalah.
25 or so years ago, I was a very young man living on this wonderful planet called planet Earth, and I found myself doubting my spiritual belief systems. I had gone through seminary, been educated as a Christian minister through the Ministry of Salvation in Chula Vista, California. 28 years old, going through my Saturn return, and I started doubting my belief system and all that I believed in, Jesus being the Messiah. Jesus had to be prayed through or prayed to and worshipped. And I started doubting all these things. And I was walking through this wonderful city called Seattle, Washington, and I saw this place called Tenzing Momo, which is an apothecary and a New Age kind of mystical, esoteric store where you can buy all kind of wonderful books and things. And I walked in, and this man sitting behind the counter was wearing a kippah on his head, which is what a Jewish person wears when he covers his head to honor God and the traditions of Judaism. And he looked at me and he goes, "I've been waiting for you for quite some time." He says, "Over there on the corner of that bookshelf, you'll find a book that's meant for you. And if you want the book, take it home, read it, study it. And in 1 week, if you decide you don't like it, bring it back. If you do decide you like it, pay for it, and it's yours, and the knowledge in there is what you are destined to learn." I walked over, I looked at the book that was sitting there on the shelf, and it was called Sefer Yetzirah, which is a book on Jewish mysticism. Sefer Yetzirah means the book of formation. I bought the book, and picked up the book, took it home, started studying it, and the book was about this mysterious thing called Kabbalah. Of course, I didn't understand it. I was a Gentile with Christian background and upbringing, but the book intrigued me. I continued to study it, and I realized that I would have to learn Hebrew to be able to interpret this manuscript and understand this manuscript. So I, at that time, started studying Hebrew. I went to the Chabad in Seattle, Washington. I started learning rudimentary Hebrew from the alphabet, just learning simple prayer. A matter of about 6 months later, I found myself on a jet airplane going to Israel, and went there not knowing a darn thing about Judaism, and stayed 4.5 years in the country of Israel, learned to read, write, speak Hebrew fluently, and studied the Kabbalah with the Rabbi Eliyahu Ovrad in Tel Aviv. During my studies with him, I came to the realization that the Kabbalah was the divine mystery that most people really needed to study so that they could even understand biblical scripture from Old Testament in the Christian theology and the New Testament in the Christian theology. So I started studying Torah at Eish Torah Yeshiva in Jerusalem because of this, and started going through my conversion process. Took about 2 years, I guess it was. And after about 2 years of study, Eliyahu Ovrad took me to a moil, had me Beit Milud, which is circumcision, at the age of 33. Uh-huh. And gave me a Hebrew name, Yeshua Baruch Ben Avraham, and I was made a Jew. I continued to study for a couple of more years and was titled Rabbi, and have continued to practice and study Jewish mysticism for approximately 25 years now, I guess it is. I'm 50, so somewhere around there, 20 years. And because of the study of Kabbalah, I have a greater understanding of the world I live in and the universe I live in and the nature of God.
Very cool. Well, one of the things, this rabbi who took you in to teach you Kabbalah, was it that easy, or did you have to, I mean, how did you find him? How did you, you know where to go to study Kabbalah of all things? Because you can find yeshivas, but how do you find somebody in Israel to learn Kabbalah?
I was actually sitting on a wall in Tel Aviv, Israel. I'd been studying tarot for many years, and I was sitting on this wall in Tel Aviv, Israel, and I was reading tarot for the public. And this Frau Lai came and sat down beside me and was watching what I was doing, and he was looking at my altar cloth that I was reading tarot on, and he looked at me and he goes, "Do you understand the Tree of Life?" And I'm like, "Yes." He goes, "You understand Kabbalah?" I'm like, "Yes." He goes, "I feel that you're an immortal being." This is what this man says to me. "I feel that you're an immortal being that keeps coming back to this world, that you have a great work that you must do for this world, and I would like to teach you Kabbalah." And I'm like, I looked at this man, and I go, "Who are you?" And he goes, "My name is Eliyahu Ovrod." He goes, "I blow the shofar on Hoshana and Yom Kippur." And he goes, I am the master Kabbalah of this country, Israel." And I'm like, "What directed you to me?" And he said, "I felt you from about 3 kilometers away." He was in his temple, and he was praying, and he said he felt my presence from about 3 kilometers away, which is a mile and a half, 2 miles. And he walked from his temple and found me on the beach reading tarot. So this is how I met Eliyahu Ovrod and befriended him. He didn't speak English very well. We found that we had a common language, Spanish, because I speak Spanish very well. And so we actually had our conversations in Spanish, because my Hebrew was very shaky at the time. And it was more street Hebrew learned in the street of Israel, more, you know, colloquial, not biblical. And so there was a lack of communication there. He took me under his wing, as I said, and started teaching me the Orthodox Kabbalah at the time. As I developed with him, he instilled a vast amount of knowledge into my puny little human brain, I guess we'll call it, because our brains are not really puny, but, you know, he instilled a vast amount of knowledge, directed me to some other literatures to study, gave me the Book of Raziel, which was all in Hebrew. I don't think there's anyone that's ever translated that book into English. Gave me the entire, all 21 volumes of Zohar. He gave me Sefer Bahir, which are all mystical books in the Kabbalah realm. And I started studying those. I found that studying the Zohar, I actually had to learn Aramaic to get an even better understanding. And doing so, found out the origins of how Hebrew is an empowering language, and how prayer and invocation in Hebrew is a very empowering and quite illuminating. Most people that live in Israel would never or would not want to practice Kabbalah because it would scare them. They've been told for many years that they would go crazy if they practiced it before they were married, had children, and were before the age of 40. But this is absolutely not.
Yeah.
Most people need to actually be taught Kabbalah from the time they're about 3, in all honesty. I mean men, women, and children should be taught the Kabbalah. It's necessary for the spiritual development of all humanity. It shouldn't be restricted to just Jewish people. Gentile and Jew alike should practice this path to spiritual enlightenment. And no matter what a person's religion is, they can still practice Kabbalah, because Kabbalah encompasses all theological belief system and religion.
Well, that, you know, that's really interesting. We're going to get into that in just a moment. But before we do, can you tell us, you're very fortunate, because I lived in Israel for a year and nobody ever came up to me and did that, although I know traditionally women weren't. I was 19 back in 1979, so, you know, I don't know what it would be like today, but, I mean, I know because I lived there. You just don't have people walking up to you like that. That's amazing. Can you tell us about your Kabbalah training, and then we're going to get into some of this stuff that you were just mentioning?
Well,
you know, how long did you train for? Is that the usual amount of time you would normally train for Kabbalah? Is that what it would take for most people to train? Things of like that. Do we all have to learn Hebrew to do that? Things of that nature.
Learning Hebrew to study Kabbalah is important, but not absolutely necessary. If a person can come to the understanding that the divine names of God are to be spoken with great reverence, they wouldn't actually be able to have to learn Hebrew. But if they understand that the Hebrew is actually, when you speak Hebrew or call upon God's name in Hebrew, you're invoking a frequency. Hebrew letters all have numerological value assigned to them, and those numerological value, many people today try to use that numerology to divine the future, and it wasn't intended for that. The numerological value to the Hebrew letters and Hebrew wording is actually divine frequencies of energy that when cantered, Hebrew creates a frequency of energy through the air about you. This is why synagogues have cantors in them and they sing the prayers, because it creates this frequency of energy that opens up the aura. Our auras, every one of us have openings in them. They're called petzach. And these openings, when music and Hebrew prayer is made, opens the aura so that people can naturally receive the blessings that the Hebrew prayer is bestowing upon them. So if a person understands what the frequency is all about, then no, they wouldn't actually have to learn Hebrew to kabel. The word kabel means to receive in God's abundance. It's very beneficial if a person learns to speak, read, write, and speak Hebrew, because Hebrew is a holy language and a very magical, we'll call it, language because of its frequency vibration. Whenever a person uses Hebrew, the spirit realm automatically comes to take a notice of the person that's using Hebrew. All spirit in the universe about us understands Hebrew. And there are other languages that they understand also, but we can get into that further in a later time. But Hebrew is a very common language, as Aramaic and Arabic also. That Hebrew, Aramaic, and Arabic, they're cousin language, by the way, but they all three create a vibrational frequency that the spirit kingdom is automatically attracted to, we'll call it. And okay. when praying, this attraction or frequency of energy brings many spirits around the person. And when I think spirits, their ancestors who are deceased and departed into the astral realm, Melachim, which are angels, Raphael, Gabriel, Michael, and Uriel are Melachim, Cherubim, Sephirim, these are various types of angels. They're attracted to the person because of this language. If the person learns to call upon the powers of Kabbalah, though, even in English, with the understanding that it's divine and holy, and it makes them divine and holy in doing so, this approach to the Kabbalah, even in English, would permit a person to have entrance into the spirit world.
Very good. So let me ask you this. Why has Kabbalah been so secret for thousands of years? Why haven't non-Jews and women been allowed to learn this ancient spiritual wisdom?
Because there have been a group of rabbinical priests that have been trying to hold this power and energy as divine and sacred only unto the priesthood, and that the common person would not be strong enough spiritually to handle the energies of the Kabbalah. And also, this priesthood has used the powers of the Kabbalah to control population, civilization, the development of civilization through the institution of law. When I say law, I'm talking biblical law, Torah. This group of men, these rabbis, saw that the only way they could get control of these people is to use the Kabbalah secretly holding the power to themselves, so that the common person wouldn't have the ability to be empowered and gaining control of his own life. They also don't want a bunch of people running around on the planet that have illuminated, doing miracles, we'll call them, calling angels, healing people of various sicknesses such as cancer, leukemia, emphysema, heart disease. People that practice Kabbalah properly will have, or will be bestowed with these powers to do these things, and they don't want a bunch of messiahs running around, we'll use that term, curing our world problems, because it would take the power away from them, and that they would see that they had no control over the population any longer. Why they didn't want women to be empowered in this way is goes back to the biblical Garden of Eden fall. Adam and Hava, Eve, were in the garden together, and she did something she was told not to. She took from the tree of life forbidden fruit and utilized it for her own purposes, and God discovered it, and or the great spirit that is God discovered it and was angered by it and removed Adam and Hava from the garden state. And that doesn't mean that they were taken out of a mystical or magical garden anywhere, because the truth is that the whole planet is Gan Eden. What happened is the doorways to the spirit realm was closed to Adam and Hava as their punishment, and they were made to be mere mortals, where they would die, get old and die. Prior to that, they were ageless. They lived thousands of years. They could have lived thousands of years. They could have lived forever in the Edenic state.
So does, in Kabbalah, does God have gender, or is there a goddess and a god? Because, you know, it's basically very patriarchal. So can you talk to us about that?
Okay, yes, ma'am. The truth is there is a masculine energy of God and a feminine energy of God. We would call that goddess. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov was neuter, neither male nor female. This God that Abraham was spoken to by was called Yehe Asher Yehe. And the word Yehe Asher Yehe is the magnified name of God that is at the crown of consciousness, keeper on the tree of life. And it is neither male nor female. It is a neuter spirit. But men in Judaism, when they pray, if they use the divine names of God and are not fearful of it, if they say Yehovah, they are talking to the divine and higher nature of the masculine archetypal God form. If a woman says El Shaddai or Yahweh, she's plugging in to the feminine archetypal form of goddess. This is another thing that the rabbis did not want the world to understand, that there is a father god and a mother god consciousness, and they didn't want women to have that god consciousness. So this is why they forbid Kabbalah to them. And I'm very sorry, and I apologize for the whole of all rabbinical teachers in the past, present, or future that refuse women to have God consciousness and plug into the feminine nature of God. I apologize for the past, present, and future event. So that maybe atonement can come for all of these rabbis that have committed corruption of Kabbalah. It should never have been denied to women, and women should never have been denied the knowledge that there is a feminine. The Torah, we'll use biblical names, because we're in America, we'll use biblical names from in English for people. Torah is the Old Testament Pentateuch of the Bible. In the Torah, in the first chapter of the book of Genesis, it says, "And the Elohim said, let us make mankind after our image, after our likeness. Let us make them male and female, and give them dominion over the bird of the air, the fish of the sea, the animals of the earth, so on and so forth. Dominion means to rule over. So this means that men and women originally were made archetypally in the image of the Elohim. The Elohim meaning Father God and Mother God, God on an archetypal level. This is a truth that has been concealed from the world. And I hope this is answering your questions.
Yes, it is. It is. In fact, and that leads us into the Hebrew names of God. If you would talk to us about how many there are and why they've been kept secret, the feminine, like how many are actually feminine, how many actually refer to the feminine and masculine side, excuse me, you know, and the fact that each name has a different meaning. What happens when you say the names of God? If you can cover that, that would be good, and the feminine and masculine aspects of that.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, there are 72 names of God from the Kabbalah that spring forth from the Shema Heshrek. The Shema Heshrek is the 72-lettered name of God, and the 72-lettered name of God is not pronounceable. It is a vibrational frequency that a person learns to invoke. It's 72 letters long, and if that person invokes all 72 letters of that name, they will not go mad. They will know the identity of God, where God is, and they will know and understand the spiritual kingdom from Malkuth, which is our foundation on this earth, to Kether, which is our crown in the heavens. The 72-lettered name can be divisible by 72 names and become 72 names that are divine and holy of God. Four of them are masculine. The rest of them are feminine. There are also only four masculine names of angels. Those are the four Melachim, which are commonly known by humanity as Raphael, Gabriel, Michael, and Uriel. The rest of the angels of the Shema Heshrek are all feminine. This knowledge was once again concealed, and this truth must be known to all mankind. As far as masculine and feminine names of God, there are a utilization of the names of God on the Tree of Life. The first five spoken in Torah, in the Bible, Old Testament Bible, are Yehe Asher Yehe, which means I am that which I am. The next one is Yehovah Elohim, Lord, who is God. The next one is Yehovah Eloah Yodav, Lord God, who knoweth and perceiveth all things. Shaddai El Hai, Goddess who rules and perseveres through all life. Adonai, which is Adonai Haaretz, in all honesty, the Lord God who is on this earth. The Lord that everyone wants to reference to is the microcosmic aspect of God. Women shouldn't say the Lord because they are giving praise to a masculine microcosmic aspect of God. They should say Reach, Queen of Heaven. Or they should say El Shaddai, the goddess who perseveres or rules over all life. On the Tree of Life, if one invokes these names of God, the five that I've mentioned, what happens is spiritual illumination comes to the person. And spiritual illumination is simply this. Inside of our human bodies are power centers. If you say or vibrate a Hebrew name of God, like Yehe Asher Yehe, your crown chakra, we'll use that term, it's called Sephiroth in Hebrew, it's your crown chakra, because so many people in America are familiar with the Hindu term, opens up, and a ray of light comes out of you and into the world around you. If you say Yehovah Elohim, a ray of light comes out of you through your third eye and into the world around you. If you say Yova Eloah Vidav, your throat chakra opens up and a ray of light comes out there. In conjunction with the throat chakra, the heart chakra opens up because throat chakra and heart chakra are united together. When you say El Shaddai, the solar plexus chakra opens up and unites with Tifereth on the tree, which is the heart chakra. And if you say Adonai Haaretz, your Malkut chakra, or the soles of your feet, open up and you are in touch with God. Now, the greatest concealed mystery of the entire Hebrew Kabbalah is that the name of God that's not supposed to be pronounced, the Yud He Vav He, literally stands for the joining place of Malkuth of the four elements. The four elements are fire, air, earth, and water. The Yod is associated with fire. The first He is associated with air. The Vav is associated with the element of earth. And the last He is the element of water. Well, the joining place of these four elements is the earth. Malkuth, Haaretz, this planet we live on. So all human beings are connected to our God, Eloheinu in Hebrew, through the soles of their feet, to the chakra in the bottom of your feet, which is called Malkuth. And the truth is that this planet is our God, that God is not out there in the universe on some kingdom, that you die and you reincarnate right back here in Gan Eden. Gan Eden means the Garden of Eden. Can you get me some water, Cindy, please? Next question or whatever?
Sure. I'm sorry. I thought maybe you had we were having some technological problems. I didn't realize you had stopped. Thank you.
I need one.
Really?
Go ahead.
What's that? It's interesting because I know we're getting into the Mother Nature side of things by what you're talking about. So I'd like to ask you, what is a Kabbalistic view of Mother Nature?
The basic precept of Kabbalah is very, 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 very simple. If you practice it in its truest forms, I'll quote a rabbi that spoke 2,000 or so years ago. He said, "The kingdom of God is found within you and all about you." This basically covers true view of Kabbalah. The kingdom of God is found inside of you and all around you. So a Kabbalist, if he's really practicing in truth, he looks inside himself and finds God, and he looks all around himself and sees God. Even the Mogen David, the Star of David of Israel, denotes the powers and principalities of what God is. And the Mogen David directs us to look all about us in four directions, above us and below us. If you look all about you in the four directions, and above you and below you, you have perceived the reality, God.
So
This planet is God, and this planet is what we sprang forth from and evolved from. And the air in the atmosphere of this planet is the breath of life that God gives us, and of course God gives us our nutriments, our food from the earth. God gives us his, her, its lifeblood, water to drink, wine to drink. He gives us food, bread of life, wonderful lamb roasted, so on and so forth. So most Kabbalists truly practicing in true awareness know that the planet is God, that it's a consciousness, or it's a conscious and living entity, and true Kabbalists don't want a war to happen that would cause the destruction of our planet, because we would kill God, and they know this. This is why most Kabbalistic rabbis practice the path called Rodef Shalom, the path of peace. Most people on this planet should practice the path Rodef Shalom, the path of peace, or pursuing peace. If we all got down to doing that and recognizing that the planet was our home, yes, but the living and conscious entity that we all worship, our wars, our problems in life would cease to exist.
Absolutely.
Else?
I think that is absolutely right, because the Earth is actually a living entity, and we need the Earth. And so really, basically, the Kabbalistic view of Mother Nature is that Mother Nature is God. I think that's pretty much, that's it sounds that way, and that's very much related to the native way of seeing things. If you will just hold for just a moment, Rabbi, we're going to break for a commercial, and we'll be back after a word from our sponsor, PsychicAccess.com.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at PsychicAccess.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We're speaking with Rabbi Joyner on Kabbalah. And Rabbi, thank you so much for answering our questions. The next question I have for you is, if you would talk to us about the two bloodlines of Jewish people. That would be great.
There are two different, actually, there are really three types of bloodlines of Jewish people on the planet. Commonly known as Ashkenazi and Sephardim. The Sephardim, the Sephardic Jew, is an actual true bloodline Hebrew, and they are first cousins to the Arab people. Then you have a group of people called, the Jewish people called Ashkenazim. The Ashkenazi, they're Jewish in religious practice, but they have very little, or very few of them have any Hebrew blood in them. The Ashkenazi people are actually Russian, Prussian, and Northern European peoples that were under control of a czar 800 or 1,000 or so years ago. This czar was a Catholic, a Christian, and he had befriended a rabbi and learned Judaism from this rabbi, went through a conversion, and then caused his entire kingdom to convert to Judaism, 800,000 people in a very short period of time, a matter of a month or so, about 800 people or 800,000 people were started in their process of conversion to Judaism, and it took a few years, of course, to convert all those folks, but they were converted into Judaism, and they became known as Ashkenazi or Ashkenazim. They really, very few of them really have a real true Hebrew bloodline. Some of them do, because Sephardics and Ashkenazi have been marrying and intermarrying through European contact and American contact and so on and so forth for the last 800 or 1,000 years, because the bloodlines are quite mixed. But most, for the most part, the Ashkenazi are European people that went through conversion and became Jews in practice. Sephardic Hebrew, or Sephardic Jews, are actual bloodline Hebrews. And Kohanim are actual bloodline Hebrews. The Kohanim, which is is in English is a Kohen. A Kohen is the bloodline of Israel that was the priesthood. Israel had a priesthood up until about 2,000 years ago that did animal sacrifice in the temple for atonement of sin. And this bloodline of priests still exists on this planet today, and it's a very distinct and specific bloodline, and in fact it has a genetic precursor in this chromosome of this Kohen personage that can be traced from generation to generation, from people to people, and from races to races, because there are many Kohens across the planet. The Jewish people have migrated all over the planet. There are Chinese Kohen, there are Native American Indian Kohen, there are Kohen all over the planet that have the genetic precursor to be a Kohen, which is a high priest of Israel. The common Sephardic are not Kohen, of course. They are just pure Hebrew people. They are the true bloodline descendants of the 12 tribes of Israel, which were all the sons of Abraham through Isaac and Jacob. And the Sephardic people, like in Israel, the national language is Sephardic Hebrew, because the frequency of Sephardic Hebrew is different than the spoken frequency of Ashkenazi Hebrew. The Ashkenazi, they have a different skull structure, a nasal passage structure. So some words in Hebrew, they just can't pronounce correctly. The correct method of pronunciation is actually Sephardic. And the Sephardic Jew, as the Arabic person, has the bright skull structure and sinus passages that allow them to speak the names of God or the names of angels and speak the Hebrew language with the correct vibrational frequency. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you. What you're really saying is if somebody, an Ashkenazi, which is my heritage, to the best of my knowledge, I'm a mix in certain ways, but I know that my Jewish side is more from Germany, Russia, the Ukraine, Poland, and that, which would be more Ashkenazi. And you're saying there's a difference because of the difference in our physical structure, our skulls, and all of that. When we speak Hebrew, different from the Sephardic people, and maybe different from the Kohanim, the people who have the high priest gene code in them. I don't know if are they built like the Sephardic people or not, but when we all speak Hebrew, there's a different resonance, which means there's a different power in the language of Hebrew when we chant the Hebrew, like the names of God or the power, the chants that illuminate us. So is there a difference between all three, the Kohanim, the Sephardic, and the Ashkenazi?
So the Kohanim are Aaronic descendants, and they're descendants of Aaron, and they were very much bred to be special people, different than even the Sephardic Hebrew. They were closely bred. You know, second cousins would marry in the tribe of Aaron, and so their genetic code is stronger and more pure. On a chromosome level, is stronger and more pure to the original bloodline of, going back to Adam bin Kotlan, the first man, Adam bin Kotlan was not the first man, he was the first Hebrew man, we'll call it that, or of that bloodline of man. The word Adam means, actually it doesn't mean a man named Adam. The word Adam means literally he who is ruddy in the flesh and can blush red. That's literally what the word Adam means, or brick red in color. Now the Kohanim, if you look at a Sephard, they're very brown or olive in color. If you look at the Kohen, and every Kohen I've ever seen, were always blushed red in the cheeks. They were always real, real red and blushed red in the cheek. The Ashkenazim are more olive or even a yellow tinge to the flesh. Most of the Ashkenazim bloodline are Mongolian or Russian of that type, but there's a lot of yellowing pigmentation in the skin. The Kohen, like I say, are bright red people. I lived in Israel for 4.5 years, and I see these people there that are, look different than the Sephard and look different than the Lubavitch Ashkenazi. And I was like, wow. And I walked up to one of these men and I asked him, why was he different than these other people? Why did he look different? And he didn't even realize that he did look different. And then I started, and I asked him what his last name, and his actual last name was Kohen. And he was actually training to be a high priest for Israel. They're actually trying to reinstitute the priesthood in Israel, and would love to have their animal sacrifice rituals for the atonement of sin of Israel, and have their holy temple rebuilt. There is a small, or actually a very large problem stopping that. It's called the Suleiman's Mosque. It's on Mount Zion where the holy temple should be built, but that's a political situation that we don't need to discuss.
Yes.
The Kohen actually do look somewhat different. The Kohen skull structure is a bit different. They're more pinched between the ears. When I say the skull is more pinched between the ears, they're narrower between the ears than a Sephardic person or than an Ashkenazi person. The Kohen has a flat spot on the back of their head that a Sephard or a Ashkenazi does not have. And why that flat spot's there, I don't know. I'm not a geneticist, so I can't really describe that on a scientific level. But the skull structure is slightly different. I think it gives them the ability to channel the light of God more powerfully.
Okay, very good. So you're saying the Kohen, they have red cheeks? Like,
yeah,
is that when you, when they get really hot, or is it just they just have really red cheeks, or is it their skin is red?
It's their skin. They have a natural ruddy pigmentation in their skin.
Huh. Okay, that's interesting.
Small observations, of course.
I'm sorry, what was that?
And these are actually from my own personal observations. I'm a very observant human being, and when I lived in Israel, I noticed that there were three types of Jews in Israel, not just two. And I was like, who is these Jewish people that are very ruddy in their skin? You know, they're still black-headed, blue-eyed, or black-headed, green-eyed. And most Kohen people also that I noticed are black-headed and green-eyed. Some of them are blue-eyed, and some of them even have red hair. But most of them are black-headed and green-eyed and ruddy complected, like really kind of a brick red hue to their skin. And as I said, the Sephardic people are more olive, like, you know, looking, if you looked at a Sephardic Hebrew and you looked at an Arab person, any person in America would think that most of the Sephardic people walking down the streets that they were looking at were Muslim terrorists or something. Because they looked the same. You know, and I'm not trying to say anything like that, of course. You know,
I know. But in other words, they're cousins, so they look alike.
They look very related. Yes, because they are related. I mean, you know, they go all the way back to Abraham and his bloodlines coming out of two wives. But yeah, they are cousins, and they look identical in skull structure, pigmentation, so on and so forth. They say the Ashkenazi, they look more European. Of course, like any white person walking down the street, the Kohen, like I say, have this little bit different look about them. You'd have to get all three of them together. But
that's really interesting, because I've always had a ruddy complexion, and I had auburn hair when I was little, so I must be a mix. That's the best, and I get really, my cheeks get really, really red. I never see that on other people when I get, when I'm playing sports or something, it stands out, and I've had people point it out to me. So I think I might be a mix, but it's pretty interesting. You've really kind of thrown me into a cat amongst the pigeons sort of mode, which is great. I'm up for the challenge. I would really love to know what my total heritage is. I know what some of it is, but I'm really grateful for your knowledge, because it gives me a course to move on to find out, you know, who I really am in terms of my heritage. So I appreciate it, realistically, you know what I mean? So there's a connection then. We're going to cover one thing before we cover something really important. There is a connection between the Native American people, the Sephardic people, and, of course, the Cohen people. Can you discuss that?
Yeah. First of all, I'm going to get right down to the nitty-gritty. I personally believe that Native American Indian people here in North America are the descendants of Israel. Any of the Native American Indian shamans that you contact with, you could do a genetic precursor check on them, and they would all have Cohen bloodline in them, every single one of them. There's actually been some testing done on several people across the board genetically, and it's been proven. They just don't publish this knowledge. But Native American Indian people have the exact same skull structure as a Jew, and they have the same teeth, their teeth as a Jew. And I'll give you a really, really wonderful thing that I've discovered a few years ago. I was in Idaho, I believe it was, and I was hanging out with some Lakota Sioux, and this Lakota Sioux shamanic chief was praying in his secret language, and he was saying, "Yeah, hey, yeah, hey," and I went, and he kept praying in his secret language, and it was like he was trying to actually say a prayer in Hebrew. I could actually piece it together, bits and pieces of it, and he was actually saying a prayer in very rudimentary, maybe we would call it Stone Age Hebrew almost. When Native American Indian shamans invoke the name, they are actually invoking the name of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Native American Indian shamanism is exactly the same thing as the practice of Kabbalah in Hebrew mysticism. There's no difference between it. The only difference is that they have their own Native American Indian languages across America, and they've taken all this knowledge that's in their souls and translated it into their own languages. But it's exactly the same thing. It's all the same energies. There's a group of people here in America, a religious group of people here in America that say they're called Mormons, and these Mormons say that the Native American Indian is the descendants of lost tribes of Israel. Now, I'm not agreeing with them because I want to be a Mormon. I do not want to be one of those, but they have stumbled onto something very important that is a truth. They have a bit and piece of the truth. Every Native American Indian in the United States of America, Central America, and South America has genetic precursor ties all the way back to Israel, and should be honored that way. When I lived in Israel, there was actually about 20,000 Native American Indians that practiced Judaism living in the mountains around Jerusalem, and were most welcomed in Israel. In all honesty, I believe that the native people of our wonderful country are descendants of Israel. Now, a lot of them do look Oriental, things of that nature, but a Cherokee doesn't really look Oriental. If you look at a Cherokee Indian and you put him right next to a Sephardic Jew, the only real difference that you're looking at is that the Sephardic Jew generally has very curly, curly hair, and the Native American Indian's hair is long and straight. Well, the long and straight black hair that they have is because they came across China and Siberia, and they intermarried with some Chinese and Siberian women as they were coming across. And as they crossed the land bridge, they came in and brought that Asian bloodline across with them also. I hope that answers your question there.
Yes, yes, it does. Can you talk to us about who Jesus is according to the Kabbalists?
Okay, Jesus, according to the Kabbalists, was a Nazor, or an Essene mystic. The Christians use the word Nazorene. This is a corruption of the Hebrew word Nazor. The Nazor cult that existed around the time of Jesus does not exist in Israel today, and there are a few Nazorites or Nazors on the planet that are still trying to practice that spiritual path, but there's not many. But the path of the Nazor was both men and women that practiced Kabbalistic mysticism. And this is kind of why the Nazora weeded out from Jewish culture, because this famous man, Jesus, kind of turned their mouth sore or sour on the Nazora system of Kabbalah. There's nothing wrong with being a Nazor, but people really don't need to take vows of poverty. They really don't need to grow their hair long or grow huge long beards to practice Kabbalah. And they don't even have to eat kosher to practice Kabbalah, for real. And a lot of rabbis teach that they have to be kosher, but that's just not true.
That's good, because I don't think I could do it. I'm teasing.
I tried to eat kosher for many, many years. I don't eat much pork today, but I do like my girlfriend's pork and biscuits and gravy sausage for breakfast in the morning sometime, and I'm sorry if the rabbis are rolling over in their graves in Israel when they're here. I'm very, very sorry, but I am still Jewish. I will be Jewish till the day I die. I was not born Jewish. I'm not Hebrew. I'm not claiming to be Hebrew, but I am Jewish in religious practice. I keep the Shabbat. I keep all high holidays. I even keep some of the lesser holidays. And I do try to eat kosher. And in fact, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I do eat kosher. And I do keep my Sabbath clean. I don't eat any pig on the Sabbath.
Very good. Thank you. I want to ask you a couple of last questions, and then I have to let you go, Rabbi. What do you feel will happen? The reason you teach Kabbalah and you're willing to teach Kabbalah to everyone all over the world, no matter who, what their religious background is, their nationality, and their gender, is because you feel this is an important time in history to become illumined as a human family, which actually ties very much into some of the other guests that I've had on to the show. And I think that's very interesting. What do you feel will happen if we don't become illumined as a human family, especially at this time?
Okay. This is what I feel. There's going to be a planetary alignment in 2012 in the month of December between the 21st and the 23rd of December. If human beings, as a family, the whole race, all of us on this planet, don't decide to strive to the path of Rodef Shalom and become illumined and live in peace on this planet, I believe that there's going to be a war that's prophesied. There's going to be a war that's going to probably, and more than likely, turn planet instead of being paradise on Earth, it's going to turn it into hell on Earth. Most human beings don't want to look at reality. We're coming to a huge apex in life, and I feel that if people don't work towards becoming more peaceful and working towards world peace and working towards spiritual illumination, that our three powerful religions on this planet are going to destroy our planet, who is our God, in the name of their belief systems. Christians, I'm sorry to say, and I don't want to use any condescending
That's okay.
Way.
This is your truth, and it's important.
Christians need to let Jews be Jews and Muslims be Muslims. Muslims need to let Jews be Muslims and Christians be, or Jews be Jews and Christians be Christians. We all need to leave us all alone and let us be who we are. Quit trying to make war on each other. I mean, I've been told, I came back from Israel in December of 95, and since returning to America, I have had probably 300 or 400 Christian pastors tell me that because I'm a Jew, I'm going to burn in hell in the name of Jesus. And that's not what Jesus said, not what he wanted. Unless people learn to be truly spiritual and quit judging and being condemnating, we're going to have a war. The Christian prophesied it. They call it Armageddon. The Jew calls it Gog and Magog. And the Islamic people call it Jihad. people don't realize and come to the realization that Armageddon is a personal war that every Christian has to have with his own personal Satan, which is his own personal devil. Every Muslim has to have his own personal jihad within himself with his own Satan and conquer it. And every Jew on this planet has to come and have his Gog and Magog with his own personal Satan and conquer it so that all of us can live in peace and quit threatening to destroy the world in the various names of their God. This was not the original design. This was not the plan. But about 2,000 years ago, at the advent of Christianity, our future became very uncertain because Christianity declared war in the name of Jesus on Judaism and on paganism of Europe. And in their declaration of war on Judaism and on paganism in Europe, they have basically doomed the planet to nuclear annihilation because Muhammad came along several hundred years after Jesus. He saw the Christian plight. He tried to bring his own people, the Arab culture, back to God through the Quran, and was...
Yes, we see how it's been taken to a fundamentalist point of view. So all three major religions of the world have a fundamentalist aspect that is very dangerous to the planet, is what you're saying. So what I want to ask you then, if you don't mind, Rabbi, the last question is, how can we prevent this from happening?
The 100 monkey effect. You get 100 people practicing Kabbalah together as a group. Their illuminating power will naturally illuminate anyone that they walk down the street by. You get 100 people in this community that I'm in right now illuminated and practicing Kabbalah, and the 100th monkey effect will take place. They will start spontaneous combustion, we'll call it, or spontaneous Kabbalah, as we call it,
yes,
where everybody will start illuminating and start crying and start experiencing all these emotions of how they've done so wrong by judging all these people in this way and that way, and done so wrong how they've tried to cause this war to proliferate and so on and so forth, and they'll back out of where they've been in their negative space. Christian, Muslim, and Jew alike, if they all practiced Kabbalah, if everyone, even Buddhists, and whoever, Hindus, any of them, any human being on this planet practices Kabbalah, and that one person gets 100 people practicing, and those 100 people get another 100 people practicing, in 2 years' time, we could eliminate every human being on this planet. Christians would come to the realization that Jesus was a rabbi that taught the path Road of Shalom, and that he was a mystic and he taught Kabbalah. Jesus said, I am a son of God, and if you follow my way, you will also become a son of God as I am and have all the powers that I do, and even greater. In other words, he could heal people of disease. He could bring dead people back to life. He could walk on water. But he practiced Kabbalah. And anyone else on this planet that practices Kabbalah could inherently receive the blessings of all of these things that God wants all of us to have, these powers and abilities, and then there would be no war, there would be no arguing anymore, because we would all know. So I believe is we need to get as many people, men, women, and children, practicing Kabbalah so that we can illuminate people in mass. Mass illumination will cause the 100th monkey effect, and we'll basically illuminate the whole planet.
Fantastic. Thank you. Yeah. Rabbi, thank you so much. I could spend hours with you. I so appreciate you joining us tonight. And I just have a great deal of respect for your knowledge, and I appreciate you sharing your insights on Kabbalah with us. Have a great night, and I look forward to speaking with you again soon. Thank you again, Rabbi.
Allura.
Yes.
If it's possible, anyone that wants to contact me can contact me via my email, or they can go to my Facebook. My name, my born Christian name, is Christopher Brian Joyner, and my Facebook is Christopher Brian Joyner, and they're welcome to come there and talk to me and leave messages, whichever. If they want to leave me emails, it's at sunrising777@yahoo.com. And when you spell Suns Rising, S-U-N-S-R-I-S-I-N-G, 777, Alexa at yahoo.com. Anyone's welcome to email me, talk to me on the internet, go join me on my Facebook, become my friends on Facebook, and maybe we can help illuminate this world.
That would be awesome. I'm looking forward to meeting you. I know you're going to be coming to Florida, so thank you so much, Rabbi. Have a great night.
Thank you very much. God bless.
You're welcome. Good night. God bless. So that's sunsrising at Yahoo, 777 at yahoo.com if you want to contact Rabbi Joyner, or if you want to contact him on his Facebook page, it's Christopher Brian Joyner, J-O-Y-N as in Neil, E-R. You can also find Rabbi Joyner's information on our guests page at psychicaccesstalkradio.com under the guests tab. And I'd like to take a moment to make a few announcements before we move on to our co-host, joining my co-host tonight. If you haven't already heard, we're presenting a four-part series on 2012 Exposed. Please be sure to join us on October 7th, 14th, 21st, and the 28th as each co-host presents our 2012 Exposed series. It's going to be awesome. Each show will have a different theme, so be sure to stay tuned for this upcoming event. Also, please visit our psychicbloggers.com site for anything psychic you'd like to learn. You can learn about anything from reincarnation to psychic development. You can find so many excellent articles, and they're all written by our psychicaccess.com psychics. So they're all written by authorities and people who actually practice what they're writing about. If you're interested in a reading from the best psychics on the net, please go to psychicaccess.com. There you'll find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics, each with their own unique gifts. Each psychic has a detailed profile for you to find out more about each of them and to choose from the list of some of the most gifted psychics around, certainly the best on the net. Many gifted psychics who have worked for other sites have come to me and let me know that they found Psychic Access to be the most credible site because of the high standards required. We're all tested, and I, for one, enjoy working for Doug, our producer, and Psychic Access because of those standards. I know that my reputation is protected because it's such a credible and reputable psychic site with integrity. So you'll find all the co-hosts here on the Psychic View also work on Psychic Access, and if you'd like a personal reading from any one of us, we'd welcome you to visit us on psychicaccess.com. Each one of us, I know, would love to hear from you. And by the way, if you are a site owner or webmaster, you can earn 50 cents per minute on every reading on traffic that is referred to psychicaccess.com. So if you'd like more details, please be sure and visit http://psychicaccess.com/webmasters. And I would like to announce the call-in number for our readings at the which will be 724-444-4851. Oh, I apologize. I think our phone lines are down. So please, I apologize for that. My mistake. Please ask your questions through the chat room. That will, that will ensure that you get a reading from us. So again, please disregard that number. Just please ask us your questions through the chat room and, we can then pick things up from there. And I will cue you in when we will go on for our free readings. And what I'd like to do, if I may, Miss Maureen, are you there?
I am here. Yes, I am.
What did you think of that interview? Was that not interesting?
It was very interesting, you know, because of my background, my mother as well.
You're Jewish and, also, right?
Well, she converted to Catholicism, my father, but the mother is still, but not only that, with the Kabbalah, everything he said was very, very easily, I followed him. I followed him. But yeah, with the whole line of the people.
Ashkenazi. In the yeah, wasn't yeah, that absolutely. Interesting? How
very
about you, Steve? What did you think? Yeah.
Well, I thought it was absolutely fascinating, and I've been doing quite a lot of reading about Kabbalah in preparation for the show, and I was just really surprised how many common threads there are between Kabbalah and the the beliefs that I've developed and the lessons that my guides have taught me. So I was just fascinated to find so many similarities.
It is so neat. Well, I want to ask you, Maureen, about the present day connection between tarot and the Kabbalah. Can you tell us a little bit about this? You were talking about, I know you and I were talking about Eliphas Levi, the French occultist. And
right.
That there may be a connection there, but go ahead and talk to us about that.
Yeah.
And even Rabbi Joyner mentioned that tonight. I don't know if you noticed that.
I absolutely did notice that in the first part of his interview. Yeah, he observed that there's 20, two cards, and I am a tarologist, so I'm very familiar with the cards. But the 22 cards of the major arcana, or the Trump suite, I want to go to a suite, correspond with the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, and thereby the 22 paths of the Kabbalists, I can't even pronounce. Well, anyway, the Tree of Life. It goes into the Tree of Life. So this would be followed. Yeah, it's very interesting. So this would be followed near the end of the 19th century when this came about, that he got into this. And then later, it would be followed by S.L. McGregor Matthews, and then A.E. Waite, which is the Waite deck we all know about in tarot.
Yes.
And then
even I do, and I don't know tarot.
I know. So, yeah, so the thing of it is the connection would apply not only to the Trump suit, but they also came to the idea that it would apply to the whole entire 78 card deck in the tarot, which is, with this understanding, the powerful secrets of the deck would begin to reveal. So the Kabbalah, or more specifically, the design of it, the Tree of Life, is a diagram of 10 spheres, and I think he spoke about that, and 22 specific pathways linking them together. And so, really, in retrospect, the connection between the tarot and the Kabbalah should have been a no-brainer, really, because most modern occultists now believe that the tarot was meant to be a tool to explain and teach the Kabbalah. And with this understanding, the tarot becomes one of the same with the Tree of Life, and any understanding of one automatically brings about an understanding of the other.
That is interesting, because now we didn't speak about this during the interview, but during prior talks that I've had with Rabbi Joyner, he mentioned that one of the things he teaches is a connection between Kabbalah and the tarot. So that's really interesting that you bring that up. Steve, I want to ask you, can you talk to some about what the Kabbalah view on identifying, pursuing one's life purpose is?
Absolutely. As I said, I've been reading quite a lot about Kabbalah in preparation for the show, and I was fascinated to see the focus in Kabbalah upon identifying and pursuing our life purposes. When I read for clients, I always try to help or ask my guides to give insight into a person's or the client's life purpose, because I believe that when we're in tune with our life purpose and we're pursuing our life purpose, it's then that we feel more peace, that we feel closer to the divine. And Kabbalah teaches this as well. It teaches us that we are to celebrate our individuality and to ascend and improve ourselves through understanding and pursuing our life purpose. And as I said, I find that when we do that, we're just so much more peaceful, so much more fulfilled and even healthier in life, and really able to make a greater difference. So there's a huge amount to learn from Kabbalah on that front.
That is very, very cool, because that does fit in to what the rabbi was saying, is that if we all learned Kabbalah or practiced that spiritual practice, we'd all be illuminated. And I think that's pretty much what you're saying. So I think that's really neat. How about what Kabbalah might have to say about altered states of consciousness and personal enlightenment? Can you talk to us a bit about that as well?
Absolutely, Alon. I was fascinated before when our guest was talking about the Hebrew letters, and when we speak Hebrew, or when a person speaks Hebrew, they invoke the angels, they invoke God. I always refer to spirit, but I often I've want to draw a comparison between that and our awareness as psychics and mediums of the importance of meditating, and of taking time to become closer to ourselves, to hear and feel the presence and insights of our guides and of the angels. And there's a huge comparison there, because Kabbalah again places a lot of emphasis upon heightening awareness and states of meditation.
Wow. See, I didn't really know that. I knew, based on my conversation with Rabbi Joyner, that the Tree of Life circles correspond with our chakras, or what I guess he called in Hebrew Sephirot. And but that would, I guess, require altered states of consciousness to open all those things up, to open up, to illuminate. We have to be able to open up to all parts of ourselves, which would mean different parts of our brain, which would mean altered states of consciousness. So that makes sense to me. That really does. I'm sorry, were you going to say something?
I was just going to say that it's similar. You know, when I got excited about the talk, the discussion about Hebrew chants, and I set iTunes up to download some Hebrew chants, because again, when you think of spiritualism, you think of psychic work, mediumship, and meditation. Different sounds, tones, and different types of music can help you to get into trance and get in tune with spirit. So there's a huge similarity there.
There is, and actually, one of the things, again, because we only had so much time on the show, and we couldn't really cover this. One of the things that he has shared with me is that when he was talking about the two different, or well now three, the bloodlines of Jewish people, the Ashkenazi, the Sephardic, and the Kohanim, he says because the Ashkenazi kind of adopted Judaism 800 years ago, somewhere around there, from being Catholic to Jews. And because of their structure, like their skull structure and so forth, when they chant, it's not the same. It doesn't have, now they can learn to do it, but it's not naturally part of their structure to be able to chant and have the same power when they chant through the sacred language of Hebrew. And I don't know if you followed that. He kind of mentioned it a little bit here, but he and I have had more of a detailed discussion. But the Sephardic people, with their skull and chest structure, when they chant, and of course the Kohanim, the high priest people, you know, Jewish people, or descendants, the Kohanim, when the Sephardics chant, it actually resonates through their chest and their skull in such a way that there's more power, more naturally. So it may make a difference in the chants. And I thought it was interesting because I am Jewish, and I don't know if you know, there's a cantor. I'm sorry about that interruption. But if a cantor, there are cantors that chant Hebrew prayers. And now that gives more meaning to me if I go to synagogue and I see that cantor chanting. Because now I understand it's supposed to invoke an illuminated state. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, and it's true that, you know, when you listen to deeply spiritual music, you listen to spiritual chanting, you do feel different. You walk into a synagogue or you walk into a church and you listen to the beautiful sounds. They uplift you. They make you feel closer to yourself, part of something much much bigger, and I think able to get greater insight and guidance from spirit.
Yes, and sound vibration, sound medicine, and all that, that makes sense, because I've actually felt when people have tried to do, what do you call it, is it sound healing? Healing with sound, I can actually feel different parts of my body being activated, so that all makes sense to me. It's so interesting how different beliefs around the world really come together and say the same thing. And it's just very cool that this has been opened up to me as a Jewish person, that I never had this, even just this much knowledge about Kabbalah and my own heritage. But Maureen, I would like to ask you, if you would, talk to us about the Kabbalist Rabbi Stephen Fizdale and his firsthand experience with both sides of Kabbalah.
Yes. He's a practicing Kabbalist. I can't, you know, Kabbalist.
Kabbalist.
Kabbalist. That's a tongue twister for me. But his first-hand experience, Stephen studies the original texts, okay, and he clarifying the ideas. And so he teaches in the traditional doctrines to people of all spiritual backgrounds, which is interesting. Because that's what Gessler's talking about, it's open to everybody. He also uses a wide range of meditational practices to help seekers to access their higher levels of consciousness. So his objective in teaching, writing, and counseling is to help people in today's world to understand clearly and experience directly the positive impact that the Kabbalah has on spiritual development by deepening connection to the self and to the divine. So it's very, very much how your guest was speaking tonight as well. This gentleman, though, he's an elderly gentleman, but he spoke in the late 60s, and studied with the greatest scholars of Kabbalah. So while he's been fascinated with this and theories, he also, while playing with the tarot, again, here's the tarot, he's a rabbi, he realized that, again, 22 cards were the main part of the deck and the Hebrew letters and so on. And there, of course, he went into, again, the tarot and the Kabbalah being so connected. And so, but he also is trusting his intuition, and so he rebuilt a tarot deck, and so stripping away that what he perceived to be non-Jewish elements, what remained were numbers and Hebrew letters, powerfully simple. It's very interesting.
Excellent. Yeah, that really, it is so interesting. I'm getting so into this. I would love to study under Rabbi Joyner. I'm so interested in all this. And I do want to announce, I know before I said our phone lines were down. They are not. So if you have pen and paper, please write this call-in number down, 724-444-4851. Remember, when you call in, you will not be put on hold. It'll be first come, first serve, so you'll be the next one in line as soon as you're ready. Once you're on, you can just ask your question. There'll be nobody queuing you, but you will be able to listen to the show while you're in there, waiting to be the next one to be called in. So, again, that's 724-444-4851. And it's time now for our free readings. And I'm not sure that we have any questions at this point. If we don't, we certainly have more information we can talk about. Great. Okay. So, Steve, I wanted to ask you, what are your findings on how Kabbalah interprets angels and demons or whatever they are?
Well, I've become really fascinated by angels, particularly because I've had a couple of experiences recently. One when a client contacted me for a reading, and I gave her a reading and said for the first time ever during a reading that I felt the presence of Archangel Michael very clearly. And I explained this to my client on Psychic Access, and she was just astounded and said to me, while I was holding on the telephone to get through to you, I was praying to Archangel Michael. I was asking him to surround me with healing and love and support. And it was just such an incredible experience. And once I'd had that experience, I found that Archangel Michael kept on making his presence known time and time again. So I was speaking with a friend about a project that we've been collaborating on, and we both looked at my computer, and as I lifted the screen of my computer, there was an image that we both saw, and that image was of Archangel Michael, and it just disappeared within an instant. It was just I looked at my friend and said, "Did you see what I just saw?" And he said to me, "Yes, I just saw Archangel Michael." And it was such an incredible experience. And it's just made me really fascinated by the presence of the archangels, and gives me a great desire to want to work more closely with the archangels. But I was very interested to read about Kabbalah's view of angels and demons. My personal understanding and the the teaching that I've received from my guides is that demons don't exist in the sense that they're not separate entities. They are, in effect, a manifestation of our negativity or of individuals' negativity. And I was just very comforted to learn that as I read about Kabbalah as well. And again, that for me really connects with the theme our guest was talking about, the fact that we have a great responsibility to take care of each other, to take care of the planet, to view the planet as God in a sense, and to really show the responsibility that we have towards each other and behave in a spiritual way. And I was just very, very comforted to learn these lessons from Kabbalah, and to learn about the Kabbalist's belief in the angels, and understanding that demons are a manifestation of just a manifestation of our negative energy, be it collective or individual.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Steve. We do have a call from Tennessee, so if we all get our psychic hats on and welcome our caller in from Tennessee, and we will get to everybody else also, but we will. I'd like to address our caller from Tennessee. Hello?
Hi, is that me?
Are you from Tennessee?
I sure am.
Good deal. Marable, yes, Tennessee. That would be you. Hello, how are you?
I am good, thank you.
Good. What can we do for you?
I have a health issue. I have a tumor on my thyroid, and I believe that I can make it go away. And I just want to know if perhaps my guides have any suggestions on which modality. I understand meditation, visualization, there's just so much available. I didn't know if I should be focusing in one area to help this go away. I want to go back and have it be gone off the x-ray.
Right.
What's your name? I'm sorry, what was your name? I didn't hear your name.
My name is Kim.
Kim, thanks, Kim. Okay.
The first thing I want to say, Kim, I've got several things that came in for me, and there may be more, but and what I usually find is between all of us, we wind up having a very full perspective on what may be happening with you. First of all, you do need to see a doctor. That's first and foremost, because I mean that is the one thing you will have to do. Okay. Now I hear that you have seen a doctor, correct?
Yes. Yes.
And you will need to work with your doctor in tandem with this. I don't know what they have. You want to continue seeing your doctor. They do need to continue to diagnose you and give you medical advice and so forth. But one of the things I see for you is nutrition is very important for you, and you will need to look into that, okay? And, I don't know, I see like green, dark leafy greens and spirulina and things like that, fruits and, you know, if you're not diabetic and so forth. Again, that's why you must work in tandem with your doctor. But one of the things I see mainly with you is that a lot of this has to do with self-expression. And that's one of the things my guides are showing me. Now, where is this on you? Did you say your thyroid?
Thyroid, yes.
Well, that's interesting because it's your throat area.
Yes.
Okay. It's really important for you to express who you are on a higher level and let go of being, how do I say this, in an effort to blend in or not rock the boat or whatever it is, you really have to be yourself. You have to be true to who you are. It doesn't mean you have to always cause trouble. But yeah, and if that's what it means, that's what it means. Not on purpose. You can be as gentle as possible, but it's really important for you to be true to who you are. If you're not, that is what I get as part of the issue for you. Okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome. Does anybody else have anything?
Yes, I do. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Steve.
Hi. Kim, my Firstly, I'm sorry to hear what you've told us, but I can feel that you're receiving a huge amount of healing, and I you should. Do you feel a warmth around your neck and your upper body around your shoulders right now?
Actually, yes.
Okay, that's wonderful, because when we were talking about Archangel Michael, I could feel healing energy, and I'm very confident that he's giving you healing right now. And I want to just remind you, my guides want to remind you that we are surrounded by spirits, we're surrounded by our loved ones and the archangels, and we can receive all of the love, the support, and the healing that we want. And now, is this my guides are touching the left hand side of my neck or my throat? Is it on the left hand side or the right?
I actually have the tumors on one on each side, actually, one on each lobe. There's a lobe on your left and the right. I have one on each.
Okay, because I feel spirit stroking your neck and giving you healing. Now, when I ask my guides what you can do, obviously Allura gave you good advice to make sure that you speak to a doctor and you take your doctor's advice. But there are other things that you can do as well. And, you know, Kim, I absolutely agree with this theme about expressing yourself, because as soon as you announced your name, my guides were talking about expression, being true to oneself, and I feel that for you, a big part of the solution is to make sure that you pursue your life purpose. So my guides are saying that you're a wonderful person, you're a wonderful mother and daughter and wonderful friend, but you haven't tended to do what's right for yourself professionally. So it's almost as though work-wise there's a blockage and you're really not doing what you want to be doing in life. And it's almost as though if as you transition towards or focus upon your purpose, the thing that makes you feel transformed, that makes you feel that you're making the greatest difference in your work, then that will be very healing for you. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely, absolutely. I've heard it before.
And Kim, it's almost as though, you know, because I was thinking, you know, if you're feeling unwell, then you may not want to focus upon what I described as work. But I want to take away that word and take it back, because it's focusing upon your purpose, the thing that strengthens you.
Yeah.
The thing that makes you, you know, jump out of bed in the morning excited about what we call work, because it feels like fun, it's like playing. There's a wonderful lady in spirit called Elizabeth for you as well. I feel as though we're at grandmother level within the family, but I get that name Elizabeth very clearly, and it's funny because she's sort of digging into the ground with a trowel. I can see her planting things and planting bulbs and planting seeds and growing vegetables, and I'm again seeing lots of green vegetables. Can you accept her? Do you recognize her?
I don't recognize her, but most of my relatives were passed when I was young.
Okay. Do you know the names of your grandmothers or your great grandmothers?
Just my grandmothers, Beatrice and Helen.
Okay, so I get the name Elizabeth really, really clearly for you.
Okay.
She's talking about jewelry. She's talking about a necklace and a ring as well. Have you removed a ring recently or stopped wearing a ring?
No, a necklace.
And you stopped wearing it?
Yes.
Okay. Because I want to say to you, Kim, I have issues with metal, so I get sort of negative vibes from things that are metal if they're in contact with my skin. So I think that you should avoid metal and really stick to natural fabrics and natural ingredients as far as possible.
maybe okay. cotton and okay. yeah.
Yeah.
God bless you,
Thank
Kim.
You. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bless you,
Kim. Oh, Maureen, did you have something you wanted to add?
I apologize. Yes. I just want mine's a little just short, but I wanted to let you know, Kim, that I feel that really your sleep is looking better. I mean, you're getting more. The healing is really important for sleep. It's after it being very like mental anguish for you prior to this. Also, I wanted to mention that it's really important who you are around with this situation, because I think that there's some, you know, you might confide in people about things and such. And I'm not talking about so much your guides. I'm talking about the physical people that are around. It's really important that you stay clear of people that are much more embracing on the positive or on the open of different areas. And also, of course, always keep the doctor. But it really has a lot to do. Our mind and body work hand in hand. And you need to feel good and thrive about what's happening. And feel like everything's a blessing and you'll thrive through this. But there's a couple of feelings about some people that aren't really, they're draining a bit. That's all.
Don't need that. Okay. Yeah, not in that. Thank you, Maureen. I appreciate it. We have a caller from Pennsylvania. Welcome. All right. Well, let's go to Kim has a question, and if we get her back on, we can take care of that. Kim says, we're considering a possible new business venture soon. A new business venture of sorts. Is this a good idea?
We have Beth on right now, I think.
Do we?
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, okay, Beth, Pennsylvania. Is this Beth?
Yes,
it's Beth. Beth, how are you?
I'm sorry, Kim. We'll get to you in a moment. Sorry.
Well, I actually typed a long question, and I'm just going to read it. My friend Craig, who I have casually seen all summer, initiated the talk with me 2 weeks ago, and he said that he had deep feelings for me. He wants me in his life a long time. He's not ready for a relationship because he needs to get his life in order, and he wants our friendship to deepen, blah, 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 blah. Since then, I felt him take a step back some days, and others he seems normal. He's still initiating contact a lot, and even last night he said he wanted to see me this Sunday, but he has not yet confirmed plans. So I kind of wanted your opinion on whether or not you saw him confirming seeing him on Sunday or not, and if we're going to have a chance to see each other this weekend.
Okay, I got something first immediately, so I'll just get it out.
Sure, Beth, go for it. Go.
I know.
Go.
You know when I get it. You know, you said there's a delay, or you were just saying it about plans, but it's not that I feel that it's going to happen. Obviously, there was a delay, but I do feel that in the next 5 to 7 days. That I see you two, unless it's somebody else, I don't know, but you're asking about him. I see you two very much connected with him, and it's very positive. And I mean, it's extremely positive. You have you have a relationship that's even deeper than physical, love. And I'm not saying you don't have you know what I mean. But it's, yes, I do see him around you, absolutely. And the next is presently around you right now, even though it looks like it's been delayed. Like I said, I don't know how it will turn around, but I do feel that it's very much there in the next, like I said, 5 to 7 days. Yes, there you have it.
Okay. Good. Good for you. How about you, Steve? Do you have anything?
I do, yes. Beth, you presumably you're Elizabeth. Are you Elizabeth?
No, I'm an Amy Beth.
You're an Amy Beth, okay. Do you recognize Elizabeth in your family at the grandmother, great-grandmother level? Because I'm wondering if
no.
I'm getting crosswise, because I've got this lady so very clearly.
Does she go by Betty?
Let me ask. I'm not going to just make it up, because I get the name Elizabeth very clearly. And when I ask now, she's saying, yes, Betty. She's talking about gardening and being very close to nature.
She might be the lady that lives in my house the spirit that lives in my house that has been
okay.
noted on a number of occasions with different readings.
Okay, now have you had issues with your roof in the past? Because she's talking about the roof. She's
yeah.
talking about heavy rain and the roof, if that makes any sense to you.
Yeah.
I feel her very strongly. And she's talking about October, actually,
as
well.
I've had some issues over the past few years and have had them fixed.
You haven't?
I have.
Oh, you have. Okay, because she's talking about the roof, and she's... Did you meet her, Beth?
No.
Well, she's got a wonderful sense of humor, and she's talking about laughter and saying that you have a wonderful sense of humor as well, but that you haven't been having enough fun recently. And I want to... Just my guides and this lady are asking you just to consider how much laughter you've had in this friendship or this relationship so far, because they're saying that the upliftment and the laughter is a very important element for you, because my guides say, Beth, that you have a strong character. You think a lot, and you spend a lot of time really thinking things over and over and over. Not to the point of obsession, but almost. Can you accept that?
I can accept that, yes.
Yeah. And this lady, Elizabeth, is wanting you to have more fun. And she's saying, you know, you really need to have more laughter, have more fun, and just trust that when you have fun and when you have laughter, that everything will work out just fine. Now, I feel good about your friend, the gentleman that you've mentioned. Did you say the name Craig?
Yes.
Now, does he have a connection to a David? Because this lady in your house is giving me the name David as well, and she's talking of David connected to Craig.
I don't know.
Okay.
Go ahead. No, I just want to let you know, I'm sorry, go ahead, finish that, and then we'll move on to Kim, because we have two other people on the line for their questions as well.
Absolutely. Well, I was just wanted to say, ask about David, and if you find that he has a strong connection with David, and David's a close friend or member of the family, then accept that as guidance from Spirit, that they guide you in his direction. My guides feel good about him. He's a good person, and I feel that what he's saying is genuine and not just a story. So wish you all the very best, and accept the love of Elizabeth, who was previously in your home. She's very fond of you. And happy that you're there.
Thank you.
God bless, Beth. Have a great
night.
Thanks, Beth.
And we have Kim's question, which is, her and Eric are considering a possible new business venture of sorts. Is this a good idea? I'm not sure what kind of business venture, but let's see. I'm going to assume you know what it is.
No.
Yeah, I get the same thing.
But I'll tell you this much. I do feel that she's, and I, you know, I do know them very well, but I don't know what this is particularly, so I am going to address this, or I wouldn't be able to objectively. But I do get a good feeling that this has been something that I think that she has been self-prisoned in a way, or maybe it's between the both of them, like feeling that, you know, they couldn't release themselves to go for it. And I get a really good feeling that she's getting a lot of knowledge. Kim, you're getting a lot of knowledge, whether it be unconventionally speaking by going to regular school, but you're soaking it up like a sponge. And you have a lot of knowledge. I say it's going to be very good because you have taken the steps to get out of that you freed yourself. And it's a celebration for this. It's wonderful. I don't know about if it just came up, but you are already getting a knowledge about how it's going to be. I say it's going to be very good, very good.
Excellent. I also, Kim, I want to let you know. What I do is I hone in on what business venture you were asking about, because I don't know what it is, and I also got the same thing as Maureen, that it's really best for you to kind of stay away from that for right now. Whichever one you were referring to. Steve, did you pick up anything? You're so welcome, Kim.
Yes, absolutely. My guides are talking about options, and they're saying that there's consideration of options, but there shouldn't be haste. They're saying that decisions shouldn't be made in the month of October, so certainly not before November. I also feel, or my guides make me feel, that there's a question around an investment. So this business idea does require an investment. It's not just a business that can be started without funding. And they're saying that the right solution involves an investment that's lower than 20,000. I'm not sure which currency that is, but it's whichever currency is relevant. But they're very clear about the fact that if you're being asked to invest more than that amount, then it's not the right option. And they also talk about food and nutrition and say that food nutrition is a very good direction for you to go in, if that helps.
Very good. Thank you, Steve. We're going to move on to our caller in Wisconsin. So our Wisconsin caller, if we can get your name.
My name is Rusty.
Rusty.
Rusty? Hi, Rusty.
Welcome, Rusty. Yes. Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I love that name for two reasons. I have a cousin named Rusty, and one of the first horses I trained on was named Rusty. He was awesome. He was ornery, but he was one of the best you could ride. He was excellent.
She's a lovely woman, this woman Rusty, too. She's very lovely.
Excellent. Rusty, what is your question? What can we help you with?
Well, I've been thinking of trying to start, like, my own online magazine, and I guess I'm just wondering if I did, would it work or would it bomb?
Okay, you're thinking of starting a magazine?
Yes. It'd just be like a free online thing that people could download or read on the internet, and I'm just basically wondering, will it work? Will it bomb? Will it, is it a good idea?
Well, the first thing I get, did somebody else want to go first?
Go on, Laura. Go for it.
Okay. I get that the timing is not right for it right yet.
Okay.
That there are certain things you're going to have to put in order or sort out. So take a step back, okay, and reflect on this first. Because what they're saying is really pay attention to things. Pay attention to all sorts of things. There are going to be details and things, but I don't know what all is involved, but what I kind of see is there are peripheral things involved that you're going to have to pay much closer attention to. And when you do that, you'll be able to the word I want to use is analyze what's not quite in order yet. And you need to put those in order. And is this in a partnership or is this all by yourself?
Well, no, I've got one person who has already agreed that they would write articles for it. So I guess you could say it's a partnership.
Okay, I'm feeling like that partner may not be quite right or at least not quite ready. Something about that person that it actually could be part of the issue, to be honest with you. Okay.
Okay.
And that could cause you quite a bit of grief, and I'd really like you to avoid that. But so really, really take a good look at all those things. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I have something to add. In fact, it's a bit actually, Laura, a little bit towards what you just said, Rusty. My feeling is that you have a really great idea, and it really needs to come to completion, but not this way, because I feel it's time to be in useful sacrifice, and I've told people they've heard me say before. What I mean by that is being crucified to a cross, but getting resurrection instead of useless and being crucified and not getting resurrection. It's painful. But there's two individuals I see that are, it's just, there's some really, there's people that are involved in this. I see two. There's a woman and there's a male energy that just are, just bring no good will come from what you want to do, and you deserve to do this on your own terms and not be, it's just almost like there's a lot of deception coming from, and this is your deal. So my feelings my feelings are very clear that even though it might be a sacrifice to hold off for a while, I feel you'll get resurrection by doing so, because this is best for you, because I think it's your deal and you're behind it, but I think people male and female are no good involved with this, and it could take you into a really bad way.
I didn't get a good feeling also. I don't know. I just didn't get a good feeling. So you really need to take a step back. And I agree, Maureen. That was very well put. Steve, did you have anything that you would like to add?
Absolutely. Just briefly, I wanted to concur with both of you. I usually really encourage entrepreneurialism, and my guides do as well. But my guides are saying that you need to just rethink the people that you're thinking of working with, and think particularly about the area that you're planning to focus upon. Because my guide's advice to you is that you sometimes get taken by an idea, and you get very enthusiastic about an idea and want to invest yourself in it. But you need to just sort of slow down, take a step back, and ask yourself, what is it that I really want to pursue? What do I really want to invest myself in? And it's when you make that decision and you stick to that course that all of the right people, the right opportunities will come your way. There's also a gentleman in spirit whose name is either it's Fred or Freddy. I hear Freddy, who's sending you love and encouraging you to just take a step back, take care of yourself, and focus upon your purpose and what will really make you happy and successful.
Very okay. Good. Thank you, Steve.
You'll do well,
Rusty. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Rusty.
Thank you, Rusty.
Thanks for coming to the show, too. It's lovely.
Yeah. Good luck with that. We have somebody from Hawaii on the line.
Aloha, everybody.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
I am fine. I'm getting better. I just wanted to call and say hello to you folks all. And you know what? I feel so much positive energy coming from your show. And you folks are all doing such a wonderful job.
Thank you. That's really nice. That's a nice bonus that I wasn't expecting, and that's wonderful to hear. Thank you so much for that feedback. Do you we appreciate that.
I didn't really ask want to read. I just wanted to say that you folks are just really, you guys are so awesome. Every time I come to your folks' show, there's just so much energy. And Steve, you're really good too, Steve.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I wanted to just say to you, as soon as you called in, my guides talk about huge healing energy with you. So I'm very confident saying that you have incredible healing energy, and if you're not already, should be thinking about the healing work and using your hands.
You know, I've got that. I'm more, I guess, empathic. I'm not practiced. I know I have the gift. I've been told by other psychics before, too, that I have the ability. I pick up on spirits a lot, and spirits try to contact me, but I don't always listen. But I'm serious. I don't. I tune myself out. Sometimes it's really bad. If I'm really happy, I'll attract good ones. If I'm in a bad mood, and I try not to be in a bad mood, but sometimes if I get that way, I will attract the negative ones.
Right.
So,
but it's good that you notice that, because you're learning about yourself when you do that, and
yeah,
you'll learn how to get beyond that, overcome it, and don't judge it. Just learn, really observe, and learn from that.
Yeah.
And you'll figure out.
I've known that for a while, but Steve was right also. I've just always been leery with it. But I called this to see if you folks... Actually, that was the main thing I thought I wanted to tell you folks, that you're doing such a good job. You know, so many times, especially what you folks do, you get people calling in, can you read me? But you know what? You don't hardly get the people calling in saying you folks are doing a good job.
Thank you, Michael. That means a lot.
It really does. Yeah. Big
bless
hugs, big
heart,
smiles.
Always. Bless your heart always, Michael. As you know, I feel that way.
Thank you. Yeah, I am sending out lots of heart energy to you and to everybody, but I'll tell you the truth. That is really wonderful that you took the time to do that, and we really appreciate that. That means a lot, because we all work hard, and we put a lot of heart and soul into this, and so it's great to hear that you receive that. We appreciate that.
Oh, yes. It's hard, you know, you folks put on a radio show, for people to listen to and to call in, you know, and to get help. And it was a good, you had a really good topic on Kabbalah today. I'm not too familiar with it. That I've heard about it. I know I have friends here actually who are into it. I'm not too familiar with it myself, but I'll probably be looking more into it after the show.
Me too. After hearing all that I heard, I learned a lot myself.
Yeah. And, you know, what you folks do, though, you know, you put on a radio show, you take your time, you have your guests come on, you do your research, and plus you read people, and a lot of times it's good to hear, you know, you folks are doing a good, you know, you folks are a blessing to others, and that is the main thing.
Thank you. That really is so rewarding to hear, because our purpose is to enlighten and expand and illuminate, as Rabbi Joyner said, as much as possible, and that includes us. So we find purpose in all of this, and that kind of feedback just makes it all very rewarding. Thank you so much, Michael. God bless.
Okay, I know your time is running out, but I did have one question.
Sure.
If any of you folks can pick it up. I know somebody, I have a guide, I don't know if it's my guide or relative. In Hawaii, I'll be quick with this, in Hawaii we have a huge moth, the Hawaiian moth is a very big moth. But in Hawaii we are told not to, if you ever see the moth, to leave it alone, because it is a sign that one of your either family members who have passed or a friend who has passed, someone you know, is coming to visit you. They are visiting you when the moth shows up. Now, the strange thing is, when I'm in a sad mood, I'll go outside sometimes and look at the sky. This moth, and I swear to God this is true, this moth will come out of nowhere, and it just flies around me in circles. And it stays with me the whole time until I leave. And this has not happened once. This has happened at least 6 times. There was a period in my life a few months ago where I was really depressed. I was going through a lot, and I was always down. And every time I would go outside, this moth would show up.
Are you asking about the meaning of the moth?
Yeah, could it be? Is it actually my guide? Or?
Well, what I get, it is spirit speaking to you, and it is a sign that that you're going to be fine. You will go through changes. Okay, you have a spiritual warrior in you, whether you recognize that or not. You are going through changes. You're going to come out the other side, but that everything will be all right, even though things are painful, even though things are tough. But it is a sign that you will grow past that. You will overcome. And that's what I get for that. We are out of time, but I want to ask very quickly for Maureen and Steve if we can wrap up. If you have anything for Michael, I want to do that. But that's what I get, Michael. That's very important for you to know that when you get that spirit letting you know, it's bringing you comfort and letting you know your gifts and what you have to overcome that. And you'll be fine. You'll get to the other side of it. You'll transform and you're protected. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Steve, go on.
Well, thank you. Well, just quickly, we've talked about Kabbalah this evening, and I believe passionately in signs and symbols from spirit, and I believe that we all have certain signs and symbols from our guides. One of mine is actually swordfish, which might sound strange, but when swordfish appears in unusual ways, I know that that's a sign for my guides to proceed. So moth is definitely a sign for you from spirit, and my guides say that when you receive this sign, it's a message that you need to move around more, that you need to sort of get out, socialize more, and really energize yourself. I get a feeling that you're a little static at times, particularly when you get down, and it's actually getting out and being with people and using your energy that will really uplift you and enable you to feel better.
Yes, and you know, I do think the moth is definitely there's something going on with the moth. I mean, I have ladybugs in the oddest places. They're not even around that will, you know, land on me. They don't even belong in the area I'm in. But you know, Michael, I think that, you know, I know a lot about you, but I do think that because you were feeling down, and I think that you have been trying to get out more. I think Steve's on to something there.
I'm sorry, all done,
because I know a lot about Michael, but Michael knows what I'm talking about, and I think that that's very true. So that's a good, and he's feeling better, so there you have it.
Excellent. I'm sorry. I thought you were done with your sentence. That's what made me do that. I apologize. What Spirit wants you to do is learn about that for yourself. You're going to get more when you ask the question, what does this mean for me? And what are you saying to me? And that moth will actually address you. So, and Spirit will address you. So I just want to say that's really important because it's part of your medicine. It's what strengthens your connection to Spirit and to yourself. So that's, I also get that. I just want to add that, because that came to me.
Very much.
And thank you. You are so welcome, Michael. God bless.
You folks are a blessing to everybody.
Thank you.
Good night, Michael. Thanks for calling and joining us.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night, Michael.
And that
brings us to the end of yet another great show. I am so grateful to everyone who's called in and really added to this because that is what makes it so much fun. I wish to thank my co-hosts and, of course, our executive producer, Doug. I work at the scenes. Next week's show will be anchored by Steve. Steve, can't wait to hear that show. It's going to be fun. What can we look forward to next week?
Well, we'll be doing a show on precognition, and you're going to be a very tough act to follow, and Maureen as well, but I shall do my very best. So we'll be looking at precognition, and we'll have a guest called Pamela Nine West, who's a wonderful medium and psychic healer, and we'll be having a wonderful discussion about precognition with Pamela.
Sounds great.
I think we may have lost Allura, our wonderful host. Okay.
I guess I'm going to say goodnight. Bless your heart, everybody. That sounds like a great show. I'm looking forward to it, Steve.
Thank you, Maureen. God bless to everybody. Thank you. Good night.